Veritas Academy was chosen by Niche as the number one Christian and private school in Northern Virginia and third in the state of Virginia. Have coffee with the headmaster every Tuesday morning. Schedule your visit now. VeritasAcademyDC.com. VeritasAcademyDC.com.
9 WMAL.
O'Connor and Company.
607 here on O'Connor and Company. Thanks for joining us. It's Larry O'Connor and Julie Gunlock here on a Monday morning after a wild weekend.
Wild storms.
Yeah. I mean, it was wild. Not wild like Elon Musk getting a massage, offering a horse kind of wild.
Not going there.
But it was pretty wild. Coming up later in this very program at 6:35, Sully Sullivan wants to be the Republican nominee for Montgomery County Executive, and he'll make his case. 7:05, Joe DiGenova, plenty to talk about with him. 7:15, Hung Cao is the Republican nominee for Virginia 10. He won over the weekend. 7:35, Charlie Spearing, White House correspondent for Breitbart News. 8:05, Scott Smith, he's the father of that victim out in Loudoun County where the school board is trying to cover up everything they did to cover up that crime. 8:15, Republican chairman of Virginia, Rich Anderson. And 8:35, Jack Carr, best-selling author, former Navy SEAL, and kind of a stud.
Yeah.
So that's all coming. That's a busy morning as usual. Glad you're here, Julie, to make it all happen. You know, there's a big push right now in the Commonwealth of Virginia, where you happen to be a tax-paying voting resident, for the legislation to push back on some telework policies that Glenn Youngkin is trying to institute. Now, this is interesting. This sort of transcends party lines.
Yeah.
Now, I want the government to stay out of employers' decisions for the most part. I mean, there's some things that need to be regulated.
Sure.
But for the most part, if an employer says, listen, I'm paying you a salary, I want you to come to work, I want you to show up, they should have the right to do that.
Yeah.
And the employee should have the right to say, yeah, no, you know what, I'll work elsewhere. Maybe I'll work for a company that offers more telework possibilities, because after the pandemic, you know, a lot of companies have decided, a lot of employees have decided, I'd rather work from home, or at least, you know, a combination of home and work. Well, Youngkin announced earlier this month that he's going to be changing policies to encourage state to employees to come back to work inside the office, right? And now Democrats are pushing back on that, saying, listen, reverse this, because if we can keep people working from home, we should be able to do that if we have the technology to do it, as long as their productivity
yes.
maintains. And I'm kind of leaning that way.
I think this is a really important issue. When I started having my children, I have always worked from home. I have been with them. My kids, you know, even before they started preschool, they were home with me. And, you know, I was sort of a stay-at-home mom for a few years. But then when I went back to work, it was for the Independent Women's Forum that has always had a work-from-home policy.
Yeah.
And I was so lucky.
Being an independent woman, right?
Well, yes, but it was very rare in those days to be able to find jobs that were entirely work from home. And I remember I would, you know, get comments from people, oh, you're so lucky. I wish I could find a gig like that. Mm-hmm. Post-COVID, I mean, this could be a reality. And I think that there is some real human capital out there that people are not really able to tap, because women feel like there's a binary choice. You put your kids in daycare and go back to work, or you don't work. And I think these opportunities will allow women to have that choice now to work from home so that they can be with their kids. And
men,
work.
By the way, so men can be more involved in their children's lives, which is a great thing for dads
exactly.
to be home too. This
exactly.
is very pro-family. I totally agree with you, except for this. In the private sector, that should be able to happen. Let competition,
sure.
free market principles reign. Independent Women's Forum decided to do that for you. You took the gig. Great, because they're a private company. You could have worked for another company or what have you. This is government work. This is government work. This is the state of Virginia. And let's face it, and in the best of all possible worlds, in a utopian situation, this would be government would work just like the private sector. The problem is there is a long, long history, especially in Democrat administrations, of corruption, of no-show jobs. Oh, sure. I mean, literally no-show jobs where people will get rewarded and there will be corruption and people will get paid for not showing up to work. And here I'm thinking it'll be a lot easier to not show up for work if you literally don't have to show up for work. So if there is robust oversight and we actually make sure that those people who do have government jobs
sure.
are getting paid and actually producing, fine. But you have to have that part of it in here, because there is a history of no-show jobs.
Look, I understand, and I agree, and I think that that is certainly something that's a problem. But it looks like Youngkin right now is saying, let's lift these COVID restrictions so people can come back to work and sit at a desk.
Well, he's saying more than that. He's saying by July 5th, you must come back to work.
Right. So I'm saying there is an awful lot of data entry that happens at jobs. There is an awful lot of things that can be done from your home. This also reduces government costs on buildings, desks, phones, just travel, transportation, parking. My God, I had a job in Washington, D.C., and the parking was insane. So,
you know, I'm sensing that you and I might have a slight disagreement on this.
I know, I'm uncomfortable.
No, it's good. 888-630-9625. Am I right or is Julie wrong? 888-630-9625. No, 888-630-WM. No, seriously, I think this is great. Have you been called back to work? Would you prefer to work at home? If you're an employer, have you had trouble making sure that people who are working who want to stay working at home, but your company is not allowing it? Are you having trouble finding good people? Do you make a distinction between government work and the private sector? Where do you stand on this? Because I think it's an interesting debate that literally crosses party lines here. 888-630-WMAL.
And again, I'm all for government oversight. I'm all for putting in some way to track what people are doing, that they're fulfilling their duties. I have no problem with that sort of oversight. But I do think that we are in a new era with technology. Mm-hmm. This technology, I mean, think about, you know, I often think about how a laptop, how that changed the lives of the working man. Yeah. How I don't have to go to my desk to turn on my computer. And I am, you know, of an age when I graduated college and started working, you had to go into an office. There weren't even Blackberries. I feel like, you know, 100 years old. But this technology has happened so rapidly. Yeah. The advancement of technology in this area has happened. So it's insane to suggest. When I had COVID, I was still doing the show from home.
Right.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That is amazing you're able to do. And so I think we need to embrace this a little bit. And government, you know, government is like cold molasses going uphill in January. Okay. So if there's something good that comes out of COVID, if we can move this along a little bit faster,
yeah,
and not have these policies reinstated or forcing people to go back to work, maybe, you know, maybe there are jobs that you have to do from the office, and the others, there's flexibility. You give people the choice.
How have I
not convinced you?
Because this will be exploited. This will be exploited, and it will be exploited for corrupt purposes. And it isn't the fact that Youngkin comes from the private sector, that he comes from the business world, that he is not a this
Which
is his
you would
first
think
job
he'd be more
in government.
Sympathetic.
Or it means that he knows very well the best way to run a company and run an organization. And in the case of his evaluation of what's going on in the Commonwealth of Virginia and the state government, the best way to manage it properly is to not allow for this kind of work at home. I'm sort of deferring to his expertise on that. But let's see. Let's see. JT in D.C. is here. He wants to throw his hat into the ring, and we'll hear his voice in a moment. I mean, what about you? Just on a personal basis, whether you're running a business or working for the government or not, just on a personal basis, all things being equal, would you prefer to work at home? Have you been called back into the office and actually you would rather work from home and you're looking for a gig that allows you to work from home? Because the Democrats right now in Richmond, they want, whenever it's feasible, the Commonwealth's employees to work from home. Glenn Youngkin now trying to make that not the situation. Where do you stand? 888-630-WMAL. It's now 6:15.
Be a part of the conversation and stay informed.
Follow WMALDC on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook.
All right, what do you think? Is there a difference here between government work? Listen, again, in the private sector, free market principles apply. Businesses should make this up on their own.
But we often talk about how government should operate a little bit more like private businesses. You know what? Having people not be cogs in a wheel, sitting at their desk for 8 hours, right?
Yeah.
I mean, this is how in some, you know, there are studies. I hate saying that. There are studies. After COVID, I promised myself I'd never say that again. But you can be more productive if you're at home. For some
workers, for some, like you said, data entry. Absolutely.
It's not just data. I think that, again,
right,
with Google Chat, with Zoom meetings, with just the rapid advancement of technology,
right,
I think that you can even manage people in their jobs working from home. I think it's really possible these days.
JT in the district. Where do you stand on this, JT? Am I right or is Julie wrong?
Good morning.
Good morning.
First of all, the amount of personal identifiable information that state and federal government have on employees that is necessary for them to be investigated to do their job is nothing I want on a kitchen table. Mm. Also, the amount of for official use only information that has to deal with decisions to run a state or a federal government is another thing that I don't want on anybody's kitchen table.
Well,
I think the information is much more sensitive. I think that the information that needs to be discussed and debated is better debated face-to-face than it is in any Zoom meeting.
Well, look, as a former Homeland Security Senate staffer, I can't agree with you more, but those are not the kind of employees that should stay home. Those are the kinds of employees that need to go into work. And obviously, those who support those employees may also need to go in to work. But there are, and we're talking about the federal government, okay? We got a lot of workers, and they don't, and many of them don't have high level need to know, SCIF level kind of jobs.
Yeah, I was going to say, new subdivisions being brought as 4-bedroom, 3-bath, and a SCIF right off the garage.
Who knows?
But JT makes a point.
He does.
This is obviously on a very selective basis,
right.
And there's some employees who have no business working from home. Thank you for that. How about Q? Really, Q? Finally, we figured out who it is. It's Q. All right, I always thought you wanted to stay anon. Go ahead, Q in Virginia.
Hey, Julie and Larry. I just want to say both of you, I think, are off the mark here.
We're always missing the point. Well, you know what? I feel like every listener thinks that.
Yeah.
There they go, missing the point again.
Yeah, there you go. But I think you two are talking to the laptop elite. You know, those of us who didn't miss a paycheck, didn't miss a meal, had a roof over our head during this whole time. But what about all those people that rely on us to get on the metro, go to our jobs in D.C. or Virginia, wherever, and the restaurants, the food trucks, the vendors.
Yeah.
I mean, that economy out there that's just like in standstill right now, because we like to sit at home and say, oh, man, this is so great that I don't have to go to work. But look at all the people we're impacting. So it's not just a singular thing. It's much wider. And I think
do you set the Virginia state employment policies based on, well, if we do this, then that means people aren't going to be going downtown, and that means they're not going to be going to restaurants, or they're not going to be going to Starbucks, and then people will. I mean, is it really just purely an economic driven decision? I mean, people are still going to go to restaurants. They're just going to go to restaurants in other parts of the state, not necessarily where the state government jobs are.
Well, I mean, I'm just looking at it from, the fact that, people are being told to go back to work,
right,
to their buildings. And I'm just thinking, when I go to the government center in Fairfax, all the surrounding businesses that, may have taken a hit.
The impact is enormous. Absolutely.
I think Q is smart.
Right.
I think Q brings up a really good point, because my husband recently had to go to Baltimore. He took the train from Union Station.
Yeah.
That is now a homeless center, by the way. It has been overrun. I mean, even outdoors, it's tents.
Mm.
And the restaurants inside, it's just changed. So I think you're right that there's an ecosystem that exists with people going to work and using the lunch places.
Yeah, but the market adapts to that sort of thing.
I get that. But that is something to
consider. All the people who lost money downtown D.C. because the restaurants were closed,
yeah,
because nobody was going there, new people got jobs with restaurants out in the suburbs, out in
of
Leesburg
course.
For people
it's
who didn't
an
go.
Interest, it's an interesting point.
It is.
Point.
It absolutely is. Thank you, Q. It's 6:21. Governor Glenn Youngkin wants all Virginia employees back to work by July 5th. Democrats now pushing back in both chambers of the House, or of the state legislature. And I sort of get it. I'm on both sides of this. I tend to defer to the governor on this. He understands the business world. And also, I worry about a long history of no-show jobs. And now we're sort of instituting it where you literally don't have to show. It will be subject to corruption. So, but you and I are debating about it.
Yeah, but I mean,
and we're asking who's right.
I'm not sure. Working, I think that there is something about working from home that allows you to get a whole different group of employees and the best.
Let's ask Nina,
yes,
in Baltimore. It sounds like she has dealt with this. Hey, Nina.
Hi, Larry.
Hi. What do you think?
I work for the state government, for the Maryland state government, and I can tell you from experience that they hand out VPN access to, like, Chiclets.
Yeah.
And there is no productivity. If I have to see something, a document or something, a hard copy, you have to make appointments. There's zero productivity. I personally know people that do nothing. They get their VPN access and they sit at home and they're supposed to answer a phone and it goes to a voicemail.
Yep. This is exactly my hunch. Yeah.
I think Glenn Youngkin knows, being in the private sector, that you need people to show up. The state government has no accountability.
Thank you, Nina. So Nina, just say it. I'm right and Julie is wrong. You're beating around the bush.
Right,
there you go.
You're
see?
Right.
Thank you, Nina.
Is that a friend of yours?
Yeah.
Did you text
Cousin.
Her to call in?
No, come on. All right, how about Adam in Southern Maryland? Go ahead, Adam, you're next up.
Hey, good morning. Hey, I think you're both right. So in the past several years, I've worked from home full time. I've worked in the office full time because of the nature of the work. And there is value in working from home. You're not distracted by your daily office distractions. You don't have to commute. You can kind of concentrate on your deliverables, if you will. And there's plenty of tools out there to be productive in that.
There you go.
But when I go into work, it's absolutely critical to me, and there's value in being in a room, whiteboarding problems out, looking at body language, collecting, going.
So a little hybrid situation. So we're both right. There's something really unsatisfying about that.
I like that.
You're taking the half right thing?
He's convincing.
Fine. 105.9 WMAL.
O'Connor and Company.
It's 6:37. Thanks for tuning into O'Connor and Company this Monday morning, getting your wet, rainy week off to the right start. Yeah, it's pretty much going to rain every day of the week, it looks like. But you're with us, so, you know, every day is sunny. Right, Julie Gunlock?
That's right.
Coming up at 7:05, Joe DeGeneva. 7:15, Hung Cao is now the Republican nominee for the Virginia 10 race. 7:35, Charlie Spearing, White House correspondent for Breitbart News. 8:05, Scott Smith, that father out of Loudoun County whose daughter was an assault victim. He wants to talk about how the school board is trying to continue to cover things up, including their own behavior. 8:15, Rich Anderson, chairman of the Virginia Republican Party. And then at 8:35, former Navy SEAL, now best-selling author, soon-to-be screenplay writer for a brand-new Amazon Prime series starring Chris Pratt. He's Jack Carr. He's a big shot. You know, he comes on the show still, though. Even big shots come on the show.
Of course.
Big shots like Sully Sullivan. He's the chairman of the Republican Party in Montgomery County and now is running for the nomination to be county executive. Sully, good to talk to you, sir.
Hey, Larry and Julie. Thanks for having me on this morning.
I hear you had a county executive forum or debate out in Poolsville last night. What was it? Because it's like, you know, the primary is not till July. So are you all just getting around to sort of like tell the voters where you stand?
It's actually interesting to be the sole Republican on the stage with four Democrats.
I bet it is.
But you get to hear people like Hans Riemer. He's still pushing Thrive 2050, and I had to remind him that it's going to cost, you know, $8.6 billion initially, and $330 million of residual cost each year. Mm. And also the fact that, you know, he was saying just 2 years ago, we need to defund the police, or sometimes, as he and Will Jawanda were saying, reimagine the police.
Yeah.
And even last night, he was saying, oh, well, I didn't say that. I'm like, Hans, it's on video.
Hans is not familiar with the fact that what he said as a politician is actually, you know, on video and on tape?
Apparently not. It's all kind of funny. And there's actually another forum on Friday that, you know, the same group was on stage. And I had to remind David Blair, who I called the $10 million man, because he's going to spend, $5.4 million cycle, and he's going to spend north of $5 million this year. So he's going to spend $10 million of his own money to work to be county executive. I had to remind him that he voted last cycle for question A, which was going to raise our taxes above the rate of inflation. And I had to do that after he was saying, hey, no new taxes. I'm like, well, David, how are you going to put in $100,000 of your own money to be able to raise taxes above the rate of inflation, but yet you're going to say no new taxes? You know, it's just, again, some of the things they say just don't make any common sense.
So it sounds also that CRT and identity politics also came up at the debate. Can you tell us a little bit about how you were able to push back on that? And what really, what was the debate? Were they all sort of on one side and you were alone on the other?
Actually, what I'm happy to see is the fact that I've got in the race, some of the narrative is, I say, moving towards the center, with Hans and Mark and all being on the far left. When I keep pushing the basic things such as public safety, education excellence, and the economy, it starts drifting back towards the center, which is great. But the CRT issue, it's very interesting how people conflate CRT with history. Mm-hmm. And I was saying that everybody wants all the history, warts and all, yeah, taught in our schools, not black history, not white history, but all history. That's what history is. It's there for us to learn from, not to pick and choose. And but they keep saying that, oh, no, well, CRT is just history. I was like, no, it's not. CRT is teaching that because I'm a black man, that my outcome in the world is based on the color of my skin, that I basically, being black, I am oppressed, and if you're white, you're the oppressor.
Yeah.
I reject that. That's, yeah.
Well, and you've got white men on the other side, Mr. Sullivan, trying to tell you how to be a proper black man, how you're supposed to think as a black. That's got to be, I know you don't like to play the race card at moments like that, but there is a separate, extra level of arrogance there, isn't there, to tell you that you're not appropriately black?
Oh, the irony, I hope everybody picked up on the irony that you have basically four white Democrats contenders and telling me that, you're not as good as us. We need to help you. And I'm like, okay. It's just insulting.
Hans Riemer's there to help.
Yeah, and you're an adult and I'm an adult, and so when they kind of push the CRT stuff on it on adults, it's one thing. We're probably mature enough and set enough that we can kind of figure this out for ourselves, but it's particularly monstrous when they do this to kids. And I think, I think a lot of parents are concerned about suggesting to a young child that your outcomes are already decided because of the color of your skin. And so I think it's really, your voice is really important on that. Did the debate, was it a contentious debate on that issue that night, or was there general agreement that it sounds like they were just kind of going with the line that we want history and they think CRT is a part of that, but was there any contentious debate on that issue?
There was. It was mostly between me and Hans, because I think the other candidates said, oh, we need to sit down now on this one.
Yeah.
And I had to remind Hans that, they're teaching CRT in schools. He wants to teach CRT in schools. I don't agree with that, nor do I agree with teaching sexually explicit materials to kids in kindergarten, first, second, and third grade.
Yeah.
I don't think that's appropriate either.
Well, listen, Sully Sullivan, if the race for county executive in Montgomery County is about CRT and identity politics and taxes and defunding the police, you're on the right side of all those issues. Mm. I think most, even in Montgomery County, most voters are as well. So great job. Let's keep in touch. The primary is late July. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. And if I can throw in a quick plug, to keep my campaign running, I need some donations so I can get out, get some yard signs, et cetera. If people can go to reardonsullivanformoco.com and donate today, I'd really appreciate it.
Excellent. Reardon Sullivan. I know I keep calling you Sully because you said call me Sully. It is reardonsullivanformoco.com. Thank you, sir.
Yes, thank you.
From the primary here, crowded field, of course. We've been focusing on the 10th Congressional District in Virginia for many, many, many months now, knowing that it's going to be all eyes will be on this race come November of 2022. Jennifer Wexton is in for the fight of her political life. Listen, let's not kid ourselves. This still leans Democrat the way this is districted out, the way it's mapped out. And Jennifer Wexton is an incumbent. She did not face any challenges, so she's got a war chest. She's got money. The Democrats want to hold on to that seat. That said, the turnout, apparently, phenomenal. I had people calling me who were online saying, I can't believe how long it's taking for me to get up to the... And actually, I had one friend who called me and said, I didn't realize this was one of those ranked ballots. Help me out here. What do you think? It's like, I don't know. I don't have opinions. I make no opinions.
Yep.
I actually did give that person my opinions.
Well, I will say it was a crowded field.
Yes.
Lots of, how many were there?
I think there was a total of 11 candidates altogether.
Absolutely fantastic people. That tells you a lot about the strength of Hung Cao, strength of his campaign, and the fact that he won with such a crowded field of great, great candidates.
And he won pretty quickly, Julie.
He did.
So the way this whole ranked ballot thing is, everyone says, okay, here's my first choice, second choice, third choice.
Yeah.
If nobody gets 50% after the first count, then the bottom candidate is eliminated.
Okay.
And then everyone on that ballot, whoever they picked for their second choice, they then get the votes, right?
Okay.
So in the first ballot, Hung Cao had 42%. In the first count. So he was already within striking distance of that 50%. I think it was around 1 a.m., I want to say, Saturday night. And we had heard from Gary was with us Friday. He said, yeah, we might not know until midday Sunday. But that was not the case. We actually had a winner. This is what it sounded like when they did the count. I think, like I said, around 1 in the morning.
Could I get everybody's attention, please? We have a winner in round 9. Hung Cao wins with 52.3%.
There you go.
Well,
and there's Hung Cao running on the beach doing his victory lap.
Much as he was a great candidate when he came on this show. He was just very decisive, he knows exactly what he wants to do. He knows how to get there. Might have been his ads on our radio station.
There were a lot of radio. It's funny. A lot of people reached out on Twitter.
I'm Hung Cao.
And said, my candidate is Hung Cao. And they said we were really swayed by the fact, you know, we were torn. We weren't sure. You could say, I retweeted them, so I'm not making this up. They said, we heard him on the radio, and we specifically heard those ads. They did produce very good ads.
They did produce very good
ads.
And
I did a quick check. Apparently, he really pretty much only ran ads here
on
the BMAL, so he knows where the voters
are. Smart. But I do think, I was really impressed with everyone, I have to say. I was really impressed with, most of the candidates that were winning.
It was, we said it over
tough,
and over.
Tough
it's a
call.
Great field,
yep.
And no matter who emerges, it's going to be a great
candidate.
And
these were people who ran because they cared and they saw the problems. I mean, this was truly passion behind many of these campaigns, and that's certainly true of Hung Cao as well.
Here's the deal, and we do appreciate all of the candidates who came on a regular basis, and I think when we had our final interview with them last week, we said, I hope this isn't the last time we hear from you.
Of course.
You need to continue to be engaged. You are a great candidate. Please be, but the most important thing that they have to do now is coalesce around Hung Cao. This is not unlike the gubernatorial race in Virginia. That was a crowded field. There were a lot of passion. There were a lot of candidates who had great resumes. Glenn Youngkin won, and then he quickly, and by the way, this is on Hung Cao, and we're going to talk to him at 7:15, and I'm going to tell him this personally. It's on him now, just like it was on Glenn Youngkin, to reach out and form those coalitions and get everybody on board on one page with one goal. With Glenn Youngkin, it was to beat Terry McAuliffe, and with Hung Cao, it's to beat Jennifer Wexton.
I think he knows exactly what he needs to do. I think he understands coalition building. I think he knows how to build and win a campaign. I have great faith in Hung Cao. But I think it strengthens him after he ran against such great, great candidates in the 10th. So congratulations to
him. Yes, Republican nominee for Congress in the 10th District, Mr. Hung Cao. And you'll hear from him personally at 7:15.
Making sense of your world.
I agree with everything you're saying.
News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
My heart just breaks.
Our house is a mess. Come on in. I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.